we have this opportunity to pause and practice and we might begin today with orienting to the space where we are. This can be such a helpful practice in daily life and in these nervous systems that are metabolizing so much activation in this world. And I invite you to let yourself slowly and intentionally orient to the space where you're sitting. Sometimes we can do this in an automatic pilot way. It's like, look, 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 check the box. It's not that. It's really letting the eyes look, land, see what's here, the colors, the shapes, the space in the room. Let yourself sort of take as much of that 360 view as your body can. So perhaps turning and gazing over one shoulder, engaging the hips if that's possible in your body. That psoas muscle has so much information in it for our fight, flight, freeze nervous system. Let yourself scan back through the space, looking sometimes in the second pass, there's a deeper seeing, the beginning of a settling and arriving. As you're orienting to the space, really tuning into windows, doors. It's a way of letting the nervous system know you could leave if you needed to. And looking over the other shoulder, again, if it's possible in your body, engaging the hips. Sometimes there's a spontaneous, deeper breath, a way the body can begin to let go, the animal body. And with eyes open, as you come back, perhaps towards the center or towards your screen, also tuning in to the circle that we're sitting with. Part of a settling is often a sense of connection or care, familiarity or safety with who you're sitting with before we ask the eyes to soften or close. And it's also why open-eyed practice is sometimes appropriate, is actually supportive for staying present. So each and every time it's a checking in. So if you like, you might take each other in. Feel the sense of the circle. You know, I know that we're sitting in little squares, but energetically I always experience us as a circle. You might too. And then tuning into what's right, what's supportive for your nervous system. You might simplify the visual field, either softening the gaze or letting the eyes close. and having oriented to the external space, we now begin to orient to the internal space. To this body that is inhabiting space, perhaps feeling the envelope of the skin, the boundary of internal and external. Feeling the touch points where internal and external meet, those places where you're met and supported by the earth, the chair, the cushion. And inviting receiving, a resting into the support that's available. And with that resting, allowing any measure of relaxing that's possible. For the muscles, a softening through the palms and the feet, a settling into the weightiness of the body, letting go of any extra efforting, that might be there with the quality of bracing or preparing, or a holding up or a holding still. There might be a releasing through the shoulders, which allows a lengthening through the neck, a light lift through the crown of the head, and that alignment might create more space for the jaw to relax, the throat to open, feeling the breath. And how the expansion of the inhalation offers a sense of the space available inside the body. How the exhalation connects us with the space around us. Trusting your own knowing of your experience in this moment and letting that inform where you place your attention in this practice today. It might be that the steady rhythm of the breath is what's most grounding, what helps you keep coming home to presence. Where it might be the felt sense of the body, a touch point or the weightiness that offers the steadiness that can help stabilize the mind and the heart, with whatever vibrations are moving through your system today. Or perhaps a sense of space or a wider awareness that connects with the external as well as the internal, maybe through the awareness of the flow of sound coming and going. Trusting yourself to be your own teacher or guide. For the remainder of this practice, practicing in whatever way supports and serves presence. Simply beginning again whenever necessary, practicing, not perfecting, practicing presence in whatever way is most available to you today. Practicing presence. reach for something over here. So we've been in this journey of exploring the messengers, and I know that it has given rise to a lot in many of your practices and in your lives. And you know, we had talked about continuing to explore, and I thought maybe before I share a few reflections, I would just offer a little space if anyone wants to speak to, you know, what contemplations, curiosities, discoveries you have been working with these practices, if there are edges that you're interested in, you know, going further with in your practice, just to see what's in the field. So I'll just see if there's anything that wants to be shared. Oh, thank you, Ellen. Really beautiful. Thank you, Jaina. Maybe just sort of receiving or holding, you know, those two sharings as a starting place. You know, we began with these teachings as a whole, and then we explored each in turn, and on the other side, we can perhaps return to, you know, this family of teachings. And we're often, given our life circumstances, perhaps drawn to one, or channeled toward one. You know, sometimes we're hit over the head with one if we have an injury, an illness, you know, whether monumental or mundane. You know, I just had my, you know, COVID booster and, you know, just felt a little punko for a day or two. And it was like, oh, you know, all these opportunities to practice, you know, that's a relatively mundane example. And, you know, certainly have been sitting with friends and folks who have recently received a significant diagnosis of something. And so, you know, big and small, our circumstances may point us to one of the messengers as a gateway for exploration, for really awakening, you know, for coming into more clarity, more compassion. I love that you named compassion. You know, there's often this upwelling, this natural upwelling of compassion when we practice with the messengers. You know, compassion for ourselves, for this body right here. Oh, this poor body. It's just doing its best, isn't it? Most days, even when it's not doing well, it's doing its best, right? And we might be pulled into wanting to care for it as well as we can, or to appreciate it, not take it for granted. We may feel the compassion arising for other bodies that are also walking with aging, illness, dying. It's another window into common humanity. You know, Jaina, you naming not alone, right? This is actually one piece of territory, whether you agree with someone's political persuasion or their, you know, choices about their life path. It's like we are all living in a body, and we're all living in a body that experiences some version of aging, illness, and dying, no matter stage of life, no matter circumstances. And often this can be a gateway into compassion in relationships with people we know well, with people we don't know, with people we despise, because there's often, you know, just the very real human suffering of embodiment, that we might be able to touch their humanity and find a softening in our own hearts, which may inform our actions, right? That fifth remembrance of, if our actions are really all we carry with us, if those actions can arise from a place of common humanity and maybe just the decency of care. You know, you don't have to, like, effusively love everyone, but honoring that there is, like, that all beings are worth some measure of dignity or respect. And my sense is that even for those people you can't stand, if they were dying of thirst, you'd probably give them a glass of water, right? Like that's the integrity of your own heart, your own goodness of living with actions, that are honoring the sanctity of life. And I think that is one of the things that arises through this practice with the messengers, an appreciation for the preciousness and the vulnerability that comes with that. And, we've also been looking through this lens of self. Self, because you brought up relationship, this idea of relationship, and you did as well, Ellen, just people I know are dying or are suffering. I'll just acknowledge this other lens of selfing. That self is also one of the places that snags us in relationship, doesn't it? So often, how we see ourselves, like I need to be the fill in the blank, the good one, the loyal one, the something, there's some quality or characteristic. Or I'm the self-sacrificing one. I mean, some of them are a little more melodramatic than others, these self-manifestations. And, or, the other piece of that is everything we expect or want from somebody else's self, that they're supposed to be attuned to me. They're supposed to be respectful or supportive or, again, fill in the blank. And sometimes, not always, but these messengers, as we've been looking at, are ways of fading, right? We use that analogy of denim. Fading that sense of self, so it's not so distinct, that the edges around what we take to be the self, this self or another self we're sitting in relationship with, to soften. And with the messengers, if we meet someone as if they are living in a fragile, impermanent human body. Sometimes there's a softening of self in relationship, that opens us to different action. Like, I used to have a teacher, who, offered the practice, the relational practice of, do I want to be right or do I want to be in right relationship? Do I want to be right or do I want to be in relationship? And when there's a lot of self in the space, we often want to be right, and when we can have a wider view, there's often an opening that we actually want to be in connection. And so when there's not so much self, we're not holding on to something, a sense of rightness, righteousness, identity. It's like, oh, gosh, I'm in this fragile human body, you're in this fragile human body. How can we repair? How can we relate? How can we, bridge these divides? And this is a practice, You know, this is not like, oh, yeah, I'm saying this, and I also want to respect how challenging this is and how vast, you know, the Grand Canyon size divides that show up in our life relationally. So maybe I'll just pause here with these few thoughts as another possible layer of bringing these teachings around the messengers and self into the context of relationship. And maybe we'll take just a short little time in breakout groups, and you can share with each other. And just gonna do, let's see. Okay, okay, I am going to create, and all right, enjoy each other, and we'll be back in a little bit. Hi, Elise. You're muted, sweetheart. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and what I'm speaking to here today, Elise, is not about, I mean, the phrase was right relationship. What you're describing is actually not right relationship. Right relationship, it's, yeah. No need for apology. I'm so glad that you asked, and I'm happy to sit with you, you know, in these few minutes. And this may be, you know, this may be the clarity, right? Like you were where you were last week, and now it's, you know. And this is not about you. This is clearly his own entanglement. Yeah, you know, but you deserve right relationship. Oh, what a lovely human. Yeah, you did. Good job, Mama. Good job. Yeah. So maybe that's a place that we can keep working in our sessions, but also in here, like honoring the fear that can arise. You know, that there's a pointing to there can be freedom through working with these, but on the path to freedom is often fear. And well, I'm probably the youngest in the group, but so I'm just gonna say that folks will be popping back within the minute, so I just wanna honor your privacy. Yeah. No. Good for you. Honor that. You deserve much better. Yeah, I see you and I love you. Yeah. I'm glad you're here today. Yeah. All right. Welcome back, friends. Welcome back. So. I know we're at the top of the hour, and I need to end on time today, but I'll just honor that we'll continue. You know, I think there's layers in here, including some of the feelings that can come up along the way as we're working with the messengers. You know, this is not like neat and tidy, like, woo, we open to the messengers and there's a sense of like awakening. Oh, you know, there can be moments, that freedom that we can feel, but there's also a lot of other things that come up along the way. So let's continue. And maybe I'll just close briefly with a poem. Some of you have probably heard this before, but it feels timely with the messengers and the addition of relationship. It's by Ellen Bass, entitled If You Knew. What if you knew you'd be the last to touch someone? If you were taking tickets, for example, at the theater, tearing them, giving back the ragged stubs, you might take care to touch that palm, brush your fingertips along the lifeline's crease. When a man pulls his wheeled suitcase too slowly through the airport, when the car in front of me doesn't signal, when the clerk at the pharmacy won't say thank you, I don't remember they're going to die. A friend told me she'd been out with her aunt. They just had lunch, and the waiter, a young gay man with plum-black eyes, joked as he served the coffee, kissed her aunt's powdered cheek when they left. Then they walked half a block, and her aunt dropped dead on the sidewalk. How close does the dragon's spume have to come? How wide does the crack in heaven have to split? What would people look like if we could see them as they are, soaked in honey, stung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time? Bless you.